This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, on Branham, Brendan behind the glass. It is a Wednesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I feel like you're in a good mood, Blankers.
I feel like I am.
I feel like you're upbeat. I feel like you're in a good
mood. I'm going to have a good day today. Good show.
That What Up H-Town, I think, set the tone for what is going to be a brilliant 3 hours of sports talk radio.
We're not going to be skipping Shannon Sharp. We're going to do our thing.
I can't make that promise. I can't make that promise. Anyways, Carlos Correa, the midnight hour, Carlos Correa strikes a huge deal. The biggest contract ever given to an infielder in Major League Baseball history. Last year, Carlos Correa got the highest average annual value ever to an infielder in Major League history. And this year, he gets the highest dollar amount for an infielder in Major League Baseball history. 13 years, $350 million. Pay the man. It's my time. Mound visits for $350 million. That's the going rate. I am glad. When I saw this contract, Blankers, my immediate takeaway, I am glad the Astros are not in business with Carlos Correa.
I thought, I'll take a step further, they dodged a massive bullet. I mean, look, tip of the cap and credit to Scott Boras, who not only got what Correa wanted, he got what he wanted, which was to be a part of a deal that was of that length and that magnitude. Correa got the money that he was always seeking, and the Astros got away from what would have been a debilitating contract had they even considered doing that kind of thing, especially with Click out of the conversation, though I don't think Crane would have done it either. But good luck to the San Francisco Giants, and we'll see how it works out. But just, you know, first glance, and when I saw the numbers, I was shocked. I was like, is, you know, later in his career, just to try and get return on investment, first base, third base, designated hitter, I don't know where he's going to be, how they plan on using him. I hope it was, you know, more front-loaded than back-loaded. I don't know. But that just seems to me like that one's not going to turn out to be a winner for the Giants.
Yeah, even if it is, like, it has the escalators, which it probably will, it doesn't impact the average annual, like right. the salary tax salary. Whenever we look at it year by year, you're looking at $27 million for Carlos Correa. This contract is going to pay him AAV, $27 million until he is 41 years old. And if we're being quite honest, look, I love Carlos Correa. I think I've made that very clear. I know that I make fun of the mound visits, and that's not really pointed to Carlos Correa.
At one point, he was one of your favorite players.
He was my favorite Astro when he was here. There's no doubt about it. I love Carlos Correa. I think he has a great baseball IQ. I think he's a good offensive shortstop. I think he's a great defensive shortstop at his best, although last year there were some signs saying that he showed a little bit decline defensively. When I make fun of the mound visits, that's because there was a local sports radio personality in the city that said Carlos Correa's best attribute were was mound visits, his leadership, which is outrageous because he's got an unbelievable glove, a cannon for an arm, and he's got a really good bat for the shortstop position. Carlos Correa is one of my favorite players in all of baseball. There is no reason Carlos Correa should get paid more than any other infielder in Major League Baseball history. Carlos Correa has one top five MVP finish in his career. 2021 is probably the only year where he was worth $27 million. Offensively, he's probably never been worth $27 million. And by the way, shortstops don't age very well.
No.
Once Carlos Correa has to switch positions, whether it's third base, whether it's first base, whether it's DH, whenever he gets to his mid to late 30s, and then eventually into his 40s, which this contract takes him to, he's not going to live up to the contract, the $27 million. He might not even live up to it next year. Somebody who's been injury prone for most of his career, there's no way that Carlos Correa should have got $350 million.
Look, I'm not mad at him, and you will always appreciate him for what he did for the Houston Astros. But you knew all along that he had these grandiose expectations for what he was going to get, for how long he was going to get it. And like you said, with the AAV, where he was going to fit amongst some of the biggest contracts in baseball, when I look at this and I say, look, he's not Aaron Judge. He's not Mike Trout. he's not a guy offensively that puts up those kind of numbers that warrant that kind of money in today's day and age, even a Shohei Ohtani, who also does it pitching, by the way, which helps him a lot, and that's why he's so valuable. When you look at it and say, look, I get that all of a sudden there was this mad rush that shortstops deserve that kind of money in the last couple of years. When you talk about the deal that he just got, when you talk about Tatis Jr., when you talk about a Lindor, but all of those are up for analysis as the contracts get later in life because of the fact that these guys have to hit the way that the other guys hit when they're just playing the outfield, and they still have to play defense at a high enough level to maintain playing the position. And I have serious doubts whether any of those three guys with those kind of contracts, look, we already know Tatis Jr. with injuries was shuffled into the outfield. And obviously then with the PEDs and everything, he's in question as a player and if he's going to play in San Diego or elsewhere. But all three of those guys, giving shortstops that kind of money, I think it's very risky.
Yeah, Twitch is kind of banging on me saying that I'm giving too much grief towards Carlos Correa. This has nothing to do with Carlos Correa. I'm happy Carlos Correa got paid, and I'm happy that his family's never going to have to worry about anything, and his distant relatives are never going to have to worry about anything. Like, it's cool for Carlos Correa to get paid. What I'm saying is I'm glad that the Astros aren't the one to give that type of contract.
Me too.
$350 for 13 years is insane. I don't care if the market's telling you that or not. It is insane. And he might not ever have a year where he's worth $27 million. And then at minimum, that second half of the contract is going to be disaster for San Francisco. He might not even make the playoffs in San Francisco, if we're being completely honest with you. And I know that San Francisco was desperate after missing out on Aaron Judge. They wanted a splash. They wanted a big name. And they bring in Carlos Correa. This isn't banging on Correa. It's just saying that I'm glad the Astros didn't give that contract. But Correa is the latest and greatest to get these massive deals in terms of length. Because this wasn't the AAV that Correa got last year, 35.1. This one's $27 million. And we've started to see the kind of trend in Major League Baseball where these players are giving up some dollars per year for long-term security.
I was going to say for a lifetime of financial comfort. Because, they give up a little in terms of the per year, but they get taken care of for multiple lifetimes, and they never, like you said, they never have to work again, and nor does anybody in their family.
Correa, 13 years. Julio Rodriguez, a little bit different because they took away his arbitration years and his league minimum years. 13 years. They signed him when he was a rookie. Fernando Tatis, 14 years. Bogaerts just got 11. Trey Turner just got 11. You go back to like Mookie Betts, who got 12 from the Dodgers. Wander Franco got 11. Bryce Harper got 13. The trend that we're seeing in Major League Baseball is that, and look, this has always kind of went on. This really isn't something that's entirely new. Trout has done a big contract like this. We know A-Rod did a big contract like this back in the day, too. Giancarlo Stanton, Robinson Cano. But maybe we're seeing it more frequently. Maybe the volume of it is picking up, where they're signing 10-plus year deals. We know that this is going to continue. You're the top free agent on the market. You're probably going to get a 10-year deal. Somebody's going to be desperate to bring in a star like the Giants are desperate with Carlos Correa. Does it bother you that major free agents are signing this 10-plus year deals, especially from like an Astros point of view first, knowing that Crane's not going to want to go more than like 5 or 6 seasons? This pretty much takes the Astros out of the market for any big-time free agents.
Well, it depends. I mean, I think one thing that you do have to factor in on the flip side of that is if they keep winning, guys like Abreu, you know, who when he said in his press conference, as soon as I watch this team in the World Series, that's where I wanted to play next year. You're still going to get guys that are going to want to try and win, depending on where they are in their career, that are going to consider the Astros. I'm glad that all these long-term deals aren't being signed by the Astros because I think they're going to be killers for the franchises that sign them. And I think that this is the going trend right now, but I'm not saying it's the right trend that teams should follow. It's not the textbook that they should be, you know, taking step by step in terms of what's the right way to run your franchise. I think they could be absolutely just handcuffed, strangulation, and all the above in terms of if the more teams that do this. But I think it's in the advantage of the Astros. I kept thinking about the Yordan deal, thinking about Yordan and his agent, as much as they wanted the money up front, going, wow, what did we walk away from? Because it looks like just the same way the Astros basically offered a number to Correa that he ended up almost doubling by getting to with the Giants. If you're Yordan Alvarez, you got to be looking back going, did I just leave about $150 million on the table? And so if you're an Astros fan, you feel phenomenal about it. But you got Kyle Tucker waiting in the wings, too, that's going to be looking for a contract. And don't think he's not looking at all these numbers going, I'm worth all that. And I'm sorry, Astros fans, I'm not sure he's worth all that.
I don't think anybody is worth all that. I would put James Click. I would build a statue for James Click. I know he just got fired after winning the World Series, and I'm okay with that. But I would also build a statue of James Click for absolutely robbing Yordan Alvarez of tons of money.
Question.
In terms of the 10-plus year deals and the Astros never going to be in that market as long as they're owned by Jim Crane, thank you. That's fine. Like, I do not care. Look at all of these contracts that are 10-plus years, and they almost all of them are either already failures or trending towards that way of being a failure. Carlos Correa hasn't played a game with the San Francisco Giants. I don't want to be the dude paying the last $200 million of Carlos Correa's 13-year contract in those final 8 years. I'm not even sure he's going to live up to it in the first 5 years.
I think first 5 years is going to be pushing to the return on the investment right at the midway point and beyond. I think is basically a point of no return for the Giants.
Julio Rodriguez, again, they signed him when he was a rookie. It's so young that whenever they sign him, that's how you got to do it. If you're going to sign a player to like a 10-year-plus deal, you have to do it pretty much right when they get called up to the big leagues. And even then, it still worries me a bit. Like, Julio Rodriguez had back issues as a rookie. What if those back issues continue for the, you know, maybe not even the next 5 years, but what about the last 8 years of that contract? I'm more okay doing it for rookies than I am players that have already used up their service time and enter free agency. Fernando Tatis, he hasn't been worth it. There's even been rumors that they're trying to trade Fernando Tatis. Bogarts hasn't played a game into his Padre contract. He's going to be nearly 40 years old whenever that 11-year contract comes up. And, oh, yeah, shortstops don't really, like, hold up. Like, what happened to Cal Ripken in his late 30s?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. And you look at it and say, well, certain teams, that it reeks desperation. But, you know, in the fact that you're looking at it from a positional standpoint going, shortstops are the guys that don't age well. Shortstops are the guys that even a Cal Ripken Jr. ends up moving to third base.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at them as they get older, their range goes, their arm goes, and yet they're still getting the same amount of money, so you're going to have to be forced to play them, and you're trying to figure out where they fit in. And you look at those long-term deals, and we started this well before Correa even left Houston and talked about Miguel Cabrera, and we talked about Albert Pujols, and we talked about how many of the deals when you did the deep dive of this magnitude actually turn out for both player and team. It always turns out for the player because their pocketbooks are fat. But sometimes they get fat too as along the way. And then you're struggling to find a place to play them. And then you're basically worried of, you know, begging for them to retire and trying to figure out when the swan song starts because the music's been playing and it's really a sad, sad song. And that's what you're looking at for a lot of teams. Desperation is exactly what the Giants were forced to deal with and why they made this move. And like you said, when you look at, I hope Correa enjoyed all of his playoff runs with the Astros, because in the National League with as many good teams that are going to beat the hell out of each other for the foreseeable future with the contracts and the players and where they're at, the Giants are going to struggle to make the playoffs no matter how much money they spend.
They're not better than the Dodgers.
They're
not better than the Padres.
No, I was going to say, in their division, they already got two teams that they're third fiddle.
713-780-ESPN. Does it bother you that major free agents are signing these deals for 10-plus years? We know that the Astros will not be involved in any of these conversations. Is that a win or a loss for the Houston Astros? 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Also, do you think Major League Baseball should step in with these big 10-plus year deals as well? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I can tell you one thing. If Major League Baseball is trying to figure some things out with their business, the people to call is HR&P. Human Resources and Payroll. Cougar, owned by Mike Holley, used to protect Heisman Trophy winners, and now he wants to protect you and your business. HR&P also members of the Cougar 100 for the 8th year in a row. Distinguished club. You've seen the HR&P signage at U of H games. You've seen their building off the Beltway. And business owners, let HR&P help you. They can help in HR compliance, benefits administration, payroll, onboarding. HR&P can help in any or all of those areas. There's no boxes with HR&P. Doesn't matter how small, doesn't matter how big. HR&P will completely customize a plan for what you and your business needs. Let them help you. That way you can spend your time and your energy doing something that you love, like growing your business and building your business. And business owners, you'll love it because they do it in a way that's unique. Technology meets service. They have the best technology. You'll love that. But you'll love their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. You won't be talking to a stranger on a call board. You'll be talking to someone who knows you. They know your business, and they know your business needs. Gal Media uses HR&P, so I'm an employee of an employer that uses HR&P. Anytime I have a question, always quick to respond, always fantastic. So take care of your employees as well by taking advantage of HR&P. Give them a call at 281-880-6525. Let HR&P customize a plan for you, 281-880-6525, or check them out at hrp.net. That's hrp.net.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Does it bother you knowing that the Houston Astros will never be able to sign these top free agents? They're going to have to hope for early signings like Yordan Alvarez. They're going to have to hope for hometown discounts like Jose Altuve, like Alex Bregman. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. 3970, I hope Correa wears number 17 with the Giants just to troll Dodger fans. Of course, the Astros beat the Dodgers in the 2017 World Series. I will say this, as a fan of Carlos Correa, I am happy that he is now a division rival with the Dodgers. I like that he's also in the National League. I don't have to worry about facing him in the playoffs unless it's a World Series, in which case I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, no, look, I'm completely with you. Look, I said to you and Brendan in an earlier show a few weeks ago, you might have a great offseason if you're the Astros without having to do a whole lot, as long as everybody keeps migrating to the National League, because the path isn't getting any more difficult for the Astros. Sure, the Mariners are trying to get where you are, but they've already admitted that they're chasing you because they know you're better than they are. And the Yankees spent all that money on Aaron Judge, and that's going to limit what else they can do, how much they can spend, no matter how much money they print. It's not as easy to do what they need to do with all the holes that they have to try and catch the Astros. On the flip side, you got the Mets getting better, the Phillies getting better, the Braves getting better, the Dodgers getting better. Well, the Dodgers aren't getting better, but they won 100 and some games last year and had the best record in baseball. You would assume they're going to still try to do some things. But then the Giants are adding. Everybody's adding. And it's just going to be, you know, a complete battle royale amongst all these National League teams. You only have to beat one of those teams in the playoffs if you get to the World Series. So your path got easier with all these moves being made on the National League side. More power to them. More money to them. Keep doing it.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. 6927, the only player worth all that is Shohei Ohtani. He plays two positions at an extremely high level. I'd be 100% okay giving Ohtani 10 years, $500 million. He's the only player I'd do a long-term contract within. I understand how Ohtani should be more valuable than every player in Major League Baseball and should get the biggest contract in Major League Baseball. I get that. But even then, even though he can pitch and can also hit, he's one person could get hurt. And, like, I don't think that dudes age all that well in Major League Baseball if they're not on PEDs. And I just think big contracts like this are awful. I think that they're minus expected value, and history has played that out. Like, there hasn't been a huge contract that has really been a good thing for any team that has signed those big deals.
No, you're absolutely right. And you and I talked about this months ago, where we said Ohtani might be the first $50 million a year guy. Mm-hmm. And he might very well deserve it, as we both said, and you just reiterated the fact that he pitches as well as he hits and gives you, you know, both sides of the equation. It's, you know, most pitchers once every fifth day. You got a guy that once every fifth day, and then the other 4 days, he's a stick in the middle of your lineup. He's got a ton of value, but that doesn't mean he's worth 10 or 11 or 12 years, because again, as a pitcher breaks down with his arm and as he gets older and loses velocity and some of the things that have worked well for him, the value obviously goes down with it. Same thing with how much his whole body can take the strain of doing both for as long as he's going to do it. So for 4 or 5 years, absolutely he's worth it. 6 maybe. But when you start talking 10 and 11 years for guys with AAVs going upwards of 30 and approaching 40 and 50, that's when you wonder where the threshold is for baseball. Like, how many more of these guys can you continue to pay like this, especially when baseball is only going to be so popular and get so much money anyway?
Twitch just said the Mike Trout contract's working out. I don't know if they're being sarcastic or not, using Trout as an example. Played in 120 games this year. He finished 8th in MVP voting. Is that what you're expecting when you sign Trout to the contract? And to your point, 2 years ago, played 36 games. Mm-hmm. Played 36 games. Like, it is a huge investment. Let's go out to the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Thomas, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Thomas?
How's it going, fellas?
Awesome.
I just wanted to just chime in on Correa. Look, I mean, I'm happy for the dude, and that's good, but and all these free agents, I mean, it's the sexy, you know, the quick move, sexy move that you want to make, kind of get the hype going. But in the end, that's why it's so important to get this GM you know, hiring correct, because we're going to be building a foundation through draft picks, acquiring young talent to, you know, be able to promote and progress. So I think that's how you build your team. And then the icing on the cake is a sexy free agent and the guy that you think can get you over the top. But it isn't the end all be all for our organization right now. So congrats to him getting his money, but, you know, it's okay for us to pass at the moment. I'll hang up and listen.
I think it's the way to build winning organizations is avoiding these contracts. To me, I'm a huge believer in this, and if you've listened to the Killer Bees for a while, I think that most of you understand this. I'm a big believer of building through the pipeline, building through player development like the Astros have. If you can get one of those players to sign team-friendly deals, you do it. Lance McCullers, Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman. You've seen it as well with Yordan Alvarez. They've tried to get it done with Kyle Tucker. Didn't work. They tried to get it done with Correa. Didn't work. Tried to get it done with George Springer. Didn't work. And then whenever you have holes to fill, you sign the Michael Brantleys, you sign the Jose Abreus, you sign a Rafael Montero. Maybe you spend a little bit more money per year, but a short-term deal. I believe that's how you have sustained success in Major League Baseball.
You avoid desperation. That's one of the big things. If you can do the things that you just laid out, but also avoid desperation, you're in a really good spot. What we're seeing is, and take from a Rangers perspective, right? A year ago, the Rangers are sitting there and they're watching the Astros. They saw the Mariners make a run. They knew the A's. They didn't know, but we all assumed at some point they're not going to pay their players. They're going to go away. But even to get out of their division, it got tougher and tougher. So they took two guys that play the same position, overpaid both of them, asked one to go back to playing second base, which he played for a year, and said, we've got to do something sexy and splashy to say with our new stadium, we're at least going to be competitive in our own division. They did it again with DeGrom. They're thinking about Benintendi. But with each of these contracts, you're looking at it going, they're getting longer, they're getting more money involved, and you're going, are they going to be worth it? We just like you said, DeGrom, with a history of health issues in the last couple of years, and you threw the whole farm at him. So teams that are desperate put themselves over a barrel almost immediately.
I'm glad you brought up DeGrom. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's get Tab in here. Tab, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Tab?
First time calling.
It might be the last time you're calling with a phone line like that. Oh, yeah, it's just brutal,
Tab. You
got
to call back, buddy. We never even got you. But you were a hell of a soda back in the day. It just didn't make
he
it.
He was fine
you
on like Tab?
No.
I was about to say, I was going to crush you.
No, that was a chick soda.
Was it?
Yeah, a lot of chicks drank Tab because they thought it was like a diet. They could drink Tab and lose weight. That little pink can.
Tab was a Rangers fan. Brendan put that on the call board, so that's why.
I will tell you, because he came through totally fine when I was trying to make the call.
He probably just drove through a dead spot. Call back, Tab.
We want to hear what you got to say.
Loosely said, you need to start worrying about the Rangers.
Oh, boy.
I saw Chris Young say that at his press conference where he said that the Rangers are now contenders. To be fair, somebody needs to contend for third place in the American League West.
Well, yeah, third place is definitely within their reach now. I mean, they should feel really good about that. And, you know, you can't get to first without taking a step in the right direction. But other than that, you're a long way away from doing what, you know, he wanted to say. So, yeah Tab, we'd love to crush. I mean, we'd love to hear from you, so call back.
Big C says eventually the Astros will have to pay these guys. I don't think so.
Here's the scary
thing. I really
thing,
don't.
So I was going to ask you that. So what do we got? Like 5 years team control with Pena?
Yeah, he's got five left.
Yeah, with the two arbitration years? At the end of that...
Well, three.
So I'm saying three team control and two arbitration?
Three arbitration.
Okay.
Yeah, the last three would be arbitration. And also, he actually, I think Pena can potentially reach arbitration sooner with the new CBA based on where he finished with the Rookie of the Year. Although he might have been out of it because he finished fifth. So I think the Astros don't have to spend another year of arbitration, but he might be super two. It might be 4 years of arbitration.
But that made me start thinking, like, in 5 years' time, are they going to let him walk, or are they going to are you looking at this kind of a deal? Because the only thing as an Astros fan you hope is what we're talking about comes to fruition. There is no return on the investment. Teams are regretting and remorseful about the contracts that they signed and the way the player performed once they signed them, and then maybe the market will kind of regress back to where you want it to be. Otherwise, you look at basically having Pena for the early stages of his career and then accepting the fact that when you want that kind of deal and you're in line for that kind of deal, good luck to you. Go get it somewhere else.
Well, it takes two to tango. I mean, the Astros wouldn't be doing their job if they're not kicking the tires
sure.
on them. Just like they kicked the tires on Tucker, and Tucker said no, and Tucker's going to enter free agency. And any time a player that is in their prime with the Astros enters free agency, they leave. That's just the way the Astros have conducted business. I think it's the right way the Astros are conducting business. And like everybody, well, eventually you got to pay. Eventually you got to play. No, you don't. You don't have to eventually have to pay if you continue to put out young players because your development is so good, because your pipeline is so good. 713-780-ESPN. Glenn Davis, the voice of soccer in the city of Houston. Of course, the host of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. He joins us next with the World Cup down to its final three. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line, being joined by Glenn Davis, the champion voice of soccer in the city of Houston. And Glenn, big one coming up here relatively shortly. France, Cinderella, Morocco, chance to play Argentina in the final this weekend. The odds aren't great for Morocco. What do you expect from this matchup coming up here in a little bit?
You know, this is exciting. Obviously, the connection with France and Morocco historically as countries plays into it a little bit. But, you know, look, Morocco's the surprise package of the tournament, highly organized, workmanlike effort beyond belief, very tight 4-3-3 system, have only given up one goal, which is, if you think about that, just through dumb luck, to only have conceded one goal in a tournament, and it's an own goal, is pretty remarkable. Nobody would have ever picked them being in the semifinals. They have nothing to lose. But I think the little hidden secret about them is the fact that, you know, these are all guys that play in top leagues in the world, in Germany, in the Bundesliga, La Liga, in Spain, the Premier League. And, of course, France are the odds-on favorite. Everybody wants it to be a France-Argentina final, Mbappe versus Messi, and you know, the big story for them is you know, can they break down this Moroccan team that just seems to be playing with, you know, three hearts right now?
Glenn, I'm curious. We talk about Tom Brady when we talk about the NFL and being the GOAT. We talk about Michael Jordan or LeBron James. Is this Messi's way of saying to the rest of the soccer world that he is the greatest of all time? Does he need to solidify it by winning a World Cup, or has this run and where he is at his career already solidified it for him?
I look at it from the perspective of this is just a brilliant footballer, whether he wins the World Cup or not. But if the conversation is subjective, which it normally is, everybody's a fan of certain players and the way they present themselves, the way they play the game. Look, it's just more fodder for anybody who's a big Lionel Messi fan to just say he's the greatest ever, right? Because winning the World Cup's where it's at. So you want to position that with Diego Maradona, who in 86 wins it. Soccer's very different then in two different ways. So Maradona's playing in an era where people could literally brutalize you, right? On the other hand, he's getting a little bit more time on the ball, which Messi doesn't get now, but Messi's now protected by referees more. So these arguments and debates are fun. They can go on forever. And that's before we forget about Pelé, who scored over 1,000 goals and won 3 World Cups, okay? He's won more World Cups than Messi will and Maradona has. So, you know, it's all subjective, but I think to your point, if we're mainstreaming it and talking about it, are you the greatest ever? Yeah, he would love to put this feather in his cap, no question.
And just as a follow-up, Glenn, the way I considered that discussion is the same way you considered the Jordan. That's why I brought up the Jordan-LeBron, because it would be more fair to basically say in his era, in the era of Jordan than LeBron before that Magic and Bird, that it's not a slight or a slap in anybody's face to say you were the best of your era or decade. You don't necessarily have to be the greatest of all time because the game changes, the rules change, everything.
Ah, but you're speaking common sense, Joel. Most people don't want to do that. They just want to have debate on the radio. So, yeah, you're bringing up a great point. There's a lot of things that were very different during the Jordan era to the LeBron era, very different from the Maradona era to the Messi era.
Greg Davis, Glenn Davis, I'm sorry, joining us on the HRNP guest line. I wanted to ask you about Greg Berhalter. That's why I went there, Glenn. When you look at this World Cup cycle, Berhalter, the job that he did, getting the Americans, of course, to the knockout stage. We know how it works with the cycles of World Cups and things like that. What do you think the future of Greg Berhalter is with the U.S. men's national team?
Yeah, supposedly he's, you know, in some sort of negotiations for the potential of an additional 4 years. I think it really comes down to, does he want to continue to work on the project he has now with the experience of a World Cup behind him, knowing that this nucleus of great young talent is coming back? I mean, I would think, this is a guess, but 10 to 11 of these guys form the basis of the next World Cup squad in 4 years. Or does he want to do day-to-day coaching? A national team coach is a very different thing. It's a lot of monitoring. It's a lot of checking in via social media and via the phone. It's traveling the world watching games. It's a lot different than the day-to-day of being on the field. So I wonder where he's at with that, because I've heard both. On the other hand, you know, he, like any national team manager, gets criticized. That comes with the territory. The Argentine coach even gets criticized. They're in the World Cup final, so go figure, right? But we'll see. He seems to have a lot of detractors, but he is also in charge of the first very progressive soccer-playing team from the United States that's ever played in the World Cup, where we've intentionally gone out in games to really go after opponents. Like the game against England, where really we dominated their midfield, dominated that game, just couldn't produce a goal.
Joining us on the HRNP guest line, Glenn Davis. One more follow-up with the U.S. men's national team. How would you assess the performance of the 2022 World Cup, of course, after missing it the last time around?
So I think it's a plus. I think it's all positive, despite, you know, some of the other things that are swirling around. I think because we saw such a nice performance in the first three games that, you know, we wanted more. I think a few things to be learned is I think the core of the team, the three midfielders who are very talented, the two outside backs, these guys got pushed too much physically. You don't score goals in the first round. You don't have the possibility to rotate and maybe rest people as much. It's a long-term tournament, but I think the way they started the first three games of the tournament, the first 45 minutes of all those games, very impressive. Outplayed opponents in every one of them. And you score a couple goals in the first round, you have a Memphis Depay playing up front for you or a clinical finisher, and things could have been a lot easier. And you could have opened the possibility of rotating your squad, resting a few more people, and making it a little easier on you when you go up against a great soccer-playing nation like the Netherlands. But all in all, very positive. It's a step forward for me.
Glenn, you know what? Obviously, you're my go-to soccer guy for everything. But with this World Cup, and I've heard you talk even with John and Lance on the bench and overall leading into the World Cup about the controversy and how Qatar was selected and now, you know, all the controversy with the media as they first started covering it. You look at this as we get closer and closer to a final and then seeing its culmination. Was it a success? Was it everything you wanted it to be for the game, for the world, or were there too many detractions because of all the distractions?
You know, Joe, this is a really good question. I've talked a lot with my friends. You know, when I see some of the people that are on TV, my skin crawls. I want to go take a shower. And the reason I say this is I just have huge concerns for, I guess, sports in general, but I also have huge concerns for the sacredness and the uniqueness of the World Cup. Let's face it, this was a bought World Cup. There's a lot of people bought that are over there because of the money. I'm trying to focus on the games, but it really is hard for me mentally to forget all the things that have occurred in and around this game when it comes to human rights, the unbelievable corruption in FIFA, you know. It's pretty hard to just sweep that to the side now. I don't know if that's because I'm older now or what, but it does bother me. I mean, I've been able to tune in and really focus in on the games, and at times I get pulled away from it. But I do agree with you. There is so much else going on around this thing. And, all you got to do is watch the Netflix FIFA Uncovered, and you'll have a whole different perception and context of this World Cup.
Well, Glenn, we know it's coming to North America next time around in 26. The three countries co-hosting it, United States, I guess it'd be tri-hosting, U.S., Mexico, and Canada. What do they have to do to, you know, put on a good show, to make the World Cup a success for the North America host?
Well, the executing of it's never going to be a problem. We're the best. I got to be careful here. You know, you can't say you're the best at anything anymore. But the United States is the best at running events. Okay, and you know, we're pretty seasoned. We know how to do that. I'm not worried about that. I'm more worried about the groupings, the amount of teams. 48 teams in it now. You know, is it everybody gets to play now? Are we diffusing competition? You know, not everybody should be at a World Cup. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. That's why you have a qualification process that takes 4 years. That's why when Messi dribbles down the sideline and sets up Julian Alvarez, people are going to remember that 30, 40 years from now because it was a magnificent moment, and it doesn't happen on a weekly basis. So that's the only thing I'm concerned about is the sacredness, the uniqueness of the World Cup. But as far as the U.S., Canada, and Mexico running one, no concerns.
Glenn, always appreciate the time. Enjoy the semifinal coming up and then the final over this weekend. Always appreciate your insight when it comes to soccer matters.
Hey, personal thank you to both you guys and to all the hosts, but certainly to you two guys for having me on. I appreciate it and for asking really good questions about it and, you know, being interested. I appreciate it immensely.
You got it.
Thanks, Glenn.
The pleasure is all ours. We appreciate you appreciate you coming on. 713-780-ESPN if you have any World Cup thoughts. Also, whenever we return, there's some thought out there that Anthony Richardson, quarterback out of Florida, has declared for the NFL draft. He could eventually become the quarterback number one. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen, but if you're the Texans, you're looking at it from a Texans perspective, would you be interested in Anthony Richardson at the Browns pick, wherever it lands? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees are buying you, it might be dinner, might be lunch. Heck, it could be breakfast. We're giving you $50 to Rudy's Barbecue at some point during today's show. I love Rudy's Barbecue. Their breakfast tacos. Really good. Have you had the breakfast tacos, Brendan?
I have not.
That's a shame.
Rudy's Barbecue is good stuff. I have not had breakfast there, but I've eaten there multiple
times. Very good. You can even get gas at some Rudy's. Also.
Or you can get gas when you leave Rudy's.
Not there. Absolutely. Some barbecue place, not Rudy's. Not Rudy's. Absolutely not. Rudy's also has very good loaded baked potatoes.
Yes, I've had one of those.
Chopped brisket, little loaded baked potatoes. So we like, you put ketchup on a loaded baked potato?
I can.
You put ketchup on a loaded baked potato that has brisket on it?
I could.
I just can't do
sorry,
it.
Not sorry.
I'm a little more okay with it when it's not loaded.
Tell
it,
me.
It's tough once
I mean, I'm saying I put ketchup on a baked potato. I can put it on a loaded baked potato. Yes, you have seen it.
I've seen it. Tell me you're from. Tell me you're not from Texas without telling me you're not from Texas.
Okay.
But we're going to give away $50 to Rudy's Barbecue at some point during the show. So make sure you're listening to the Killer Bees. Killer Bees buying you either breakfast, lunch, or dinner. The Wheelhouse will also be giving away some Rudy's Barbecue. So make sure you're plugged in to ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5 all day long. All right, Anthony Richardson. A lot of folks think that Anthony Richardson is going to climb in this NFL draft. I believe that he is going to climb in this NFL draft. He is toolsy. He looks the part. He is big. He is fast. He's got a cannon for an arm. A lot of things that NFL general managers, NFL executive people drool over. I ultimately think that Anthony Richardson is going to go in the top half of the first round of the NFL draft. We know the Houston Texans are going to have, well, we don't know officially, but we feel very confident thinking that the Houston Texans are going to have the number one pick. We feel very good that the Browns pick is going to end up somewhere around 10th. We don't know exactly where, of course, it depends on their finish in the last four games. But if I told you right now, Texans do whatever they want at number one, but don't go quarterback. They trade down, they go defense, whatever the case may be. But with the Cleveland Browns pick, they take Anthony Richardson. Would you be okay with that?
No, I would not. I am not a fan of Anthony Richardson as QB1 for the Houston Texans. I watched him play. I watched him get overhyped because of one play on a scramble in the pocket early in the season, and everybody lost their mind, and they instantaneously started moving him up draft boards and talking about the size and the athleticism. And the more I watched him play, the more I watched, you know, one of the factors that I always bring up to you that I'm looking for in a quarterback, and that is that pocket presence, those intangibles, that way to think yourself through each and every play. And I don't see that, and I don't see the accuracy of the way he throws the football in him being the kind of guy that I want to see the Texans build around at this point in his career and as the importance of it for the Texans. I think there are guys that are further along. There are guys that are more polished. There are guys that I think would be a better fit. I also go back to what you said about Caserio and his trends.
Hold on a second. You said fit. I don't know if we know the fit yet.
Well, that's true. I mean, the system can change, right?
Unless you're talking about fit for Caserio, which is a fit that I can
buy
into that. I'm
saying fit for the franchise. You want a guy that already comes in and kind of takes away a lot of whoever the coaching staff is going to be, takes a lot of the time that they're going to have to take early on with certain players in terms of progressions and
now,
you know, internal clock and you know, knowing where you are down in distance to where you can take, you know, take a 2-yard loss as opposed to a 12-yard sack. Those kind of things. Bryce Young obviously has those things. He's limited with his physicals, right?
Sure.
His measurables.
Yeah, I don't know if he's the athlete that Anthony Richardson is. Not to say that I'm wanting an athlete at quarterback. Now, I think fit could come into play. We don't know who's coaching this team.
Right.
And if it's Lovie Smith, I don't want a quarterback. I'd rather just go all in defense, see where you're at in a year, and then figure it out then. But if you do go quarterback, you're thinking, you know, at minimum, a new offensive philosophy,
correct,
a new offensive coordinator. So the fit there is kind of different. Now, what's interesting is that Caserio might be the one deciding fit. So, like, you might already have the guy in place that's deciding what he wants that guy to look at. There's been some thought, and we've even talked about this and talked about this quite a bit, that we're not 100% sold that Caserio is going to want a little quarterback.
Right.
There hasn't been a huge sample size with Caserio as the GM of the Houston Texans bringing in QB. He brought in Davis Mills. He brought in Kyle Allen. If we want to call Jeff Driskel a quarterback, I don't even know if we should. But again, like, bigger dudes, not smaller dudes. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean he's like anti-small quarterbacks. We just don't know. And then we also lump it what happened in New England to Nick Caserio, big, you know, quarterbacks that aren't always mobile. Like, it seems like New England had a type, and then people are now looking at Caserio saying that he might have that same type. We don't know. So perhaps Caserio does have a fit in mind, and I would even point to Derek Stingley Jr. as Nick Caserio drafting a player that fits what Nick Caserio wants to do that doesn't necessarily fit what Lovie Smith wants to do. Now, in terms of Anthony Richardson, the Cleveland pick, I'm okay with the idea of not going quarterback number one. We all know that. I'm okay going quarterback with whoever's there at Cleveland's pick. We all know that. I'm okay with the idea of not going quarterback at all, or maybe drafting one and taking a gamble and a chance in the third or fourth round. Anthony Richardson's not it for me, though, for a lot of the reasons that you said. I understand that he is like everything that a scout would love, that he makes coaches, it's like, you know, salivate, right? Mm-hmm. That he's a big quarterback, very athletic, very fast, has a cannon for an arm, but he does things that I don't want from my quarterback. I think a lot of times we like misproportion. That's not the right word I'm looking for, but like we misvalue what's important from a quarterback. We put like praise and weight on certain attributes that I don't think matter as much, or at least we're inflating it. And then sometimes we ignore the other attributes that I think are very important. Like for a cannon for an arm, I don't need a cannon for an arm. I need a guy who can make the throw, but not necessarily with the best fastball. Like, I didn't think Peyton Manning had a cannon for an arm, and I thought Jamarcus Russell did. I thought Mike Vick had a cannon for an arm. Tom Brady hasn't had that. What I want is a quarterback who makes good decisions, makes good reads, knows where to go with the football, knows how to read a defense, all of those things. And when you watch Anthony Richardson play this year, when you listen to scouts discuss Anthony Richardson, they talk about how he's a project, how he's got a long way to go to understand how to play quarterback at the NFL level. Also, on top of that, you're drafting a guy who you're going to have under contract for 4 years, five if you pick up the fifth-year option, if you want to throw the tag out there as well, sixth year, and maybe even the seventh year. I don't want to draft projects with a contract that is fixed. If I know I'm getting a guy for 4 or 5 years, I don't want to take a chance. I don't want to roll the dice. I have to know that I'm getting good productivity in those 4 to 5 years.
You already are taking a chance no matter who you take by taking a high first-round pick on a quarterback and then hoping he pans out and hoping that you evaluated correctly. But that's what I was talking about with fit for this franchise. This franchise can't afford to wait and delay the rebuild from embrace the suck to getting back to prominence and staying there for a sustained amount of time by having to work several years with a quarterback, because we've all known and discussed how important the quarterback position is and the most important position in sports. You know, they might develop the rest of the roster and keep using all these draft picks correctly and hitting on guys and building this roster, and then say, well, but wait, hurry up and wait, because we've got to delay until our quarterback catches up with the rest of our roster. I just don't think it's the right fit. You can get a guy more polished for this franchise.
I can get behind the idea of Anthony Richardson as a first-round draft pick. I honestly didn't realize how much steam this was starting to get, like, lately.
Yeah, this dude from CBS said he could eventually be the top quarterback in the NFL draft. He could eventually go number one.
That being said, it is...
That better be a trade.
You talk about the fit, and I don't know if you could find a much worse place. Because this city needs something to bring them back to the Texans, right?
I hate that. No, but listen, hate that theory.
No, you need to like wait and hear where I'm going with it, though. Because what I'm saying is, if you do take him, you're going to be so pressured to put him into a situation before he's ready to be there. Mm-hmm. I think more than most organizations in the NFL would. And that's not a place where he can be going.
No.
You cannot put him on a team where you roll out a terrible quarterback next year and there are calls on day one to just throw him into the fire and see what happens.
See, I think that's a great point, too, in the sense of, like, I don't care. Like, if the Texans drafted Anthony Richardson and they say, you know what, he's not ready to play in year one, would that irritate a lot of people? Yeah. And I would say good for the Texans of making, like, a bold move that's for the best interest of him and for the team. I hate the whole, oh, the Texans must draft Bryce Young at one because of the fan interest. Get out of here with that.
I don't even think that, but if you take a player in the first, it's going to be hard to ask fans. And I get that.
No,
it's
not
how you should build, but it's going to be tough to ask fans to not see that player for a year.
I completely agree with that thought. But if you're operating with the premise of I'm worried about my fans, I can't get behind a team that's worried about what their fans are thinking.
Yeah, see,
I want an owner and a general manager who are doing whatever it takes to win, not what their fans want.
See, I think you could say, whether right or wrong, I think that you can get behind they must draft a quarterback drafting where they have their picks in the first round. I get that. But saying that you must draft that quarterback, I don't think that we're there yet. I think that the process is still in the fetal stages in terms of evaluation. We've seen what they can do on the field, but now we know that they're going to be poked and prodded and worked out and put through all these different, you know, drills and things to try and figure out who that guy could be, is, and then we know everybody like Caserio has a type, has a fit. But I think that to say that it has to be one guy, well, that's the beauty of drafting where you draft. It could be any guy. It's up to you. The beauty's in the eye of the beholder that sits at the top of the draft that doesn't have to wait for anybody else to see who they might get to fall to them. They get to make that choice, which is why it's hyper important. You do your evaluations. You're absolutely dead set sure if you're going to take a quarterback that high that is the guy that you want. And then you roll the dice, roll with the punches, and see where it all plays out. But you don't want to be the team that ends up passing or sitting back and watching other teams take guys in front of you because you were passive or you decided, hey, I don't like any of these guys. And it goes against your theory of passive.
But if they don't, why should they draft somebody if they don't like them?
Well, because we talk about it from a baseball perspective in terms of desperation. There are franchises like the Bears, like the Browns in the past. Like, there are certain franchises that just out of pure desperation know we got to get a quarterback in this year's draft because we missed on another one. And they keep doing it. The Bears traded up for Trubisky out of desperation. They did it again to get to Fields because they knew they missed on Trubisky, and they knew that their coach and general manager were trying to hang on to their jobs. So they did it again.
But that's bad.
I'm saying it is bad, but yeah. I'm saying it's one thing to say you want to get a quarterback in this draft. It's another thing entirely to say I need Anthony Richardson as my quarterback.
Well, you would have to like him. Like,
you got to be sold on him.
You better
him, right?
not be drafted a dude that you don't like. Love.
I don't like being sold on a guy that needs 2 years of seasoning.
Yeah, and like that's why I think people are going to fall in love. And to Brendan's point, I think I believe that Richardson's going to be a top half of the first round quarterback. I don't want it to be the Texans. 713-780-ESPN. Would you be okay with Anthony Richardson? 713-780-3776. I also had a thought. Are you in love with quarterback at one or are you in love with Bryce Young at one? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.